People are going to read this book. They're going to listen to this audio program and they will be given the warning. I fought hard for my success like you have. And I know I have to continue to fight to keep it, to maintain it, and to continue to grow it. And I do that by starting with my culture. One day in our offices, I'll tell you a little story here. I saw one of our sales guys. I mean, this is nitpicky and kind of crazy, but one of my sales guys is, he's got a sticky pad. Okay. Now he's talking to a client that could be worth $40,000 or $50,000 and he's got one of these little sticky notes. I went over to him and I asked him, "Hey dude, what do you think that customer's worth to us?" He told me he thought the account was worth, he's like, "If I close this deal, I think this account will be worth $80,000. Then why have you reduced my customer to a sticky note? I'm not short on paper, bro. Okay. I'm not short on paper or technology." I went to my office immediately and I outlawed, told everybody, stop what you're doing. Get rid of every sticky note in the sales department. Okay. Get rid of sticky notes. This ain't a sticky note culture. Now, sticky notes, and the reason I got so freaking hammered on this deal was sticky notes reminded me of how I used to be when I was poor, when I was just making it, when I was scrapping, when I was spending more time saving than I was making. I was trying to save things. I actually remember a time when I went to the bank for a loan and I printed on both sides. The income statement was printed on both sides. I was so cheap. I was focused on staying small, not getting big. So I outlawed sticky notes in my office. Maybe you should do the same. Similarly, I had a guy walk into my office for a job interview wearing cologne. Now, this is my culture. This is my company. I said, "Hey man, if you want to get a job here, by the way, if you get the job here, which I doubt you will, don't ever wear cologne in here again. This is my company and I hate cologne. I don't want to smell you before you walk in my office. By the way, I'm not smelling you. I'm smelling Armani or whoever the hell that is in that bottle. By some token, if you smoke cigarettes, use drugs, drink, or have marital problems, if you have money problems, if you live in drama, okay, if you demand to have drama in your life, you can do it on your own time. Do not bring it home to me. Don't bring it to my office. Don't bring it to my house. Don't bring it to my kids. Don't put it in my car. And definitely don't bring it on the plane." Look, we live in a world today where business owners feel bad about getting what they want. It's unbelievable. Why would a business owner feel bad? Why would a guy running a company feel bad about telling people what he wants? It's crazy. People can't even work in their own company and feel good about it. I'm doing whatever it takes in my company to get what I want. Even if it takes telling someone the hard truth. Dude, your breath is bad. You need to fix it. Dude, your breath is bad twice. You need to fix it. Bro, you got a problem. You got to fix that thing, that whatever that smell is coming out of your face. You got to fix it. Because I'm not going to be held hostage in my own company by a guy that's got halitosis or a gum disease or whatever's going on in his gut. I attempt to dominate the thinking of my employees every day because I'm trying to dominate my own space. If I can't control his breath that I'm paying him and I'm handling my own breath, why can't I handle his? Okay. Look, my people spend 8 hours a day with me. I want to feel good about them. They want to feel good about them. Maybe nobody else will tell this cat the truth. Dude, you got to do something and the mints ain't handling it. Okay. My people spend 8 hours a day with me and they're influenced by their surroundings for the other 16. Okay. If he's got that breath thing going on, I guarantee you he's got it going on. Maybe I'm going to do him the great service of saying, handle it. I don't know what my people are reading. I don't know what they're listening to. I don't know what they're watching or practicing or doing home the other 16 hours, but I know that while they're here, it is my basic moral obligation that while they're here to give Robert and John and Ben and Ryan and Sherry my honest, hey, look, let's be great here. Let's be great while we're here. Let's do something extraordinary while we're here. Let's be on the same team. I know each day I have to work that out for myself. I have to work very hard to protect this Grant Cardone culture. And if I don't work to protect it, it's going to become somebody else's culture. If my companies every day we create, we narrate, disseminate the success stories of the companies. 2 or 3 times a day, I text staff breakthroughs, accomplishments, client successes. I have to be reminded of our successes. I've got posters throughout the building, inspirational quotes around the office. No one doubts where they are. They know they're outside of every office. Who are we working for? What are we doing? What do we believe in? I start every day with a meeting talking about our successes, and I continue to disseminate those success stories through the day. Plaster the environment with your mottos, your mission, and the things you believe in. Keep people busy running from task to task, and keep your attention on achieving targets. This is your culture. This is who you are. Look, it's going to take some effort to get everyone on board. Okay. It's going to take a lot of effort to get everybody on board. Okay. With your brand and keep them there. Okay. And to maintain that. But let me tell you, this is the only thing that works for the obsessed. You as the leader must be the most obsessed person on the team. And you got to have people around you who believe in you and your mission. At the end of the day, if you don't provide the structure and invest time, energy, and resources in keeping them there every day, everything else will fall apart. If you want spectacular people, it starts with you being spectacular by example, embracing your obsessions, okay? It takes less energy, and you're going to find you're less tired. If you're tired right now, it is because you're probably fighting the obsession to be great. You need to be great before they will be great. You have to be obsessed in order to get them obsessed. Until you show up early and stay late, don't expect other people to. If you do it the way I have, one day, I promise you, you will look up and see others doing what you have been doing and even better than you. Chapter 11, be a control freak. That's right, I said it. Be a control freak and never apologize for it. I was recently asked in an interview, do you consider yourself, Mr. Cardone, a control freak? Immediately I said, without a doubt. I love control. I demand control. I lust for control, and I make sure that I have control. And by the way, the only people who don't like control are those who don't have it or who have misused it in the past. Look, all of my role models growing up were outgoing, aggressive, charismatic, and willing, thank God, to exert control. I was attracted to the idea that the person who is in control had the power. They're called the shots, and they made the decisions. You understand? The people that are in control have the power. Who doesn't love and admire the person in control? The superhero who puts himself at risk or herself at risk in order to solve problems, a control freak, must be, to protect people and save the world. The James Bond, for example, he had all the great equipment, the slick suits, the hot women, got what he wanted, when he wanted, how often he wanted. He had the best cars and best of everything. He's also always in charge, if you notice, willing to disregard authority, control, and do the right thing. And more dangerous, by the way, than all the other bad guys put together. Now, I know that's just a movie, but in real life, let's talk about me and you. Control. I couldn't wait to grow up and be in charge. My dad was a control artist, okay? Thank God. Thank God the father of the household had control. He wielded his control like a hammer. And like Thor would toss that hammer through the universe and didn't put up with any nonsense from anyone. It not at home. Look, if you can't control your home environment, how are you going to control your office environment? This made our environment safe. Didn't make it bad. We knew who was in control, and then we knew who to follow. We knew who the leader was. We knew when he said, let's do it, we were going to do it. Okay. He knew where he was going, and we knew to follow him. We knew what he expected from himself and others. He had an unbelievable work ethic. He loved people, and he believed being successful was his duty, that he was setting an example for those around him. He commanded respect and demanded discipline from himself and others. My older brother, Curtis, adopted a lot of that swag that my dad had, what was swag or control or discipline or confidence or whatever you want to call it. My brother was strong. He was fast, super articulate, confident, and one of the most natural political people I'd ever met. He could have been a natural born politician. I idolized both of these men. Now, look, I have no idea if either saw themselves as leaders or control freaks or whatever, but they definitely influenced the people's behavior around them. Even if they didn't have a formal title. Control versus leadership. Look, I'm constantly asked about my leadership style. Well, the truth is I don't think about a leadership style. I don't think about leadership. I think about control. I'm like, you know, I'd rather talk about control than leadership. I want control. Now, I know this is controversial. I know most people will challenge me. I know most people are going to say, the leader that has to have control is a bad leader. Okay, whatever. All right. Go run a military operation and see how that's going to go. Just being a great leader. inspiring others. You need control. And the fact is, the people that are following you want to know who's in control. And when someone's not in control, people get confused. I know leader sounds more inspiring than control freak. I know that the business world wants to talk about leadership, but when things go wrong, I'm going to tell you, I don't care about who the leader is. I want to know who's got control, right? I want control when things go bad, things get ugly, when the world contracts, when there's a crisis or a terrorist attack or something goes out of control. I want control. I don't want leadership. I want to know someone's in control. I want to know someone's confident about which way to go. I want answers in the moment as quickly as possible. I'm not looking for a leader. I'm looking for a solution to a problem. I want to solve problems quickly and know I have the ability to deliver solutions and get the scene back under what? Leadership or control? Scene goes bad. What do you want right now? You want that scene back under leadership or do you want that scene back under control? Finances go crazy. Do you want leadership or you want control of the finances? You got a drug problem, okay? Do you want control of the drug problem or leadership over the drug problem? You get it? You got a business. The business is going in 50 different directions. Do you want leadership right now or control of the 50 directions? See, I want control. Now, over time, control, Dr. Seuss maybe, has come in, dropped in and said, control, don't control the kids. Am I a leader? I don't know. I guess I'm a leader. I don't know. I led myself here to write this book. I led myself here this morning to read the book. Or did I control myself to get here on time to do it? Look at my own organization with my finances, with my family, with my church, with the community. Yeah, I'm a leader. I guess people think I'm a leader. I don't think about myself being a leader. I think about control. In business, social media, in the sales arenas, I'm a leader. No doubt about it. People consider me, if you think sales, who are the top 3 or 4 or 5 salespeople in social media or in business or as leaders? I was just given an award for being top 10 most influential business leaders on the planet. It's a great title, man. It's beautiful. I guess they just couldn't put control there. Okay. Business control freak, because it's not acceptable. Okay. Now in this, therein, as Shakespeare said, therein lies the opportunity. See, when I go to work for another company or support, let's say I go to work and do some work for the Pentagon and support them, I'm not being a leader there. I was invited in to do something. I am working with others who are leading, but I still want control. Trust me, I still want control. Maybe I'm splitting hairs here. Maybe it doesn't really matter, but I don't care about the title. I just care about whether I have the power to determine, predict, and influence an outcome. And if you look around, you're going to see we have a lot of people calling themselves leaders who do not have control. They have control of nothing. They've actually turned over control to regulators and to the government and to politicians and to hope and to the economy. I played baseball when I was young, up until the time I was in college. I was a catcher. And as a catcher, it was my job not just to catch the pitch, but to guide the team from behind the plate. I wasn't the best athlete on the team. I knew how to get others excited. I knew how to get them focused because I was able to exert control onto these other 8 players and even onto the other 9 players and even to the fans in the stands. Look, I was willing to use my voice, my energy, and my confidence to build conviction of others, to control how others felt. It's my belief that all true leaders are willing to take control. It takes guts to stand up and exert control over your environment, over your people, and over their futures. And by the way, that kind of control is a good thing. The willingness to exert control takes courage and confidence. It's amazing what you can accomplish once you clear up any negative connotations you have about this word control. Make a decision to exert control and then get used to being or using control to improve the condition of those around you. See, I think control is always, people always associate, if you have control of me, you're making me do something bad. But what if I have control of you and I actually get you to do something that's good for you? What if I push you to the point to where you actually step into the zip code of greatness for the first time in your life? See, this point is especially key. By pushing people to levels, by controlling people, by pushing them into levels they've never thought they could achieve, you will do something for them that their parents, their teachers, their siblings, and their peers refuse to do. Everybody's minding their own business. Leave them alone. You're going to show them how to make the most of their life and pass on to them your gift of obsession. If you haven't been called a control freak at some point in your life, you have a problem. Those who don't like control are the ones with the problem, not you. Those who don't like being called a control freak are confused. It's time to fall in love with control again. It's time to fall in love with it and learn how to use control to improve your surroundings, control them, and make your dreams a reality. If you can't control these 2 feet, you can't control anything. Be willing to be a control freak. Be willing to be obsessed and consumed with the idea of a refrigerator in order, an apartment in perfect order, a bed where the sheets are tied down. How do you feel when you go to a hotel and they got everything tucked in? Even the toilet paper's got a little love crease in it. I like it. Be willing to be in control. Look, the haters and the naysayers will hate you for this. Why? Because the hater and the naysayer refuses to control anything. Only average people refuse to assume control. The losers don't want control. The winners demand it. Control is a good thing. It's a great thing. It is a high thing. It is a spiritual condition. Just because others try to, you think God doesn't want control. He's like, I'm going to do some butterflies. Okay. I'm going to do some mountaintops. I'm going to do some skies. I'm going to do a sun. I'm going to do a moon. You don't think he wants control? Look, just because others try to make you bad doesn't mean control is bad. Just because others try to suggest you too much control is a bad thing does not mean it's true. The fact is, out of control people have given in control people a bad name. You understand? When I'm in control, nobody gets hurt. The father that's out of control hurts his kid. The father that is in control does not need to use force on an 8-year-old. Remember, what others criticize are the very things they have given up on. Remember, this is a very vital thing. If you want to be obsessed, you need to understand who's going to tell you not to be obsessed. People that gave up on it. I didn't give up on my obsessions. Just because my obsession turned into a daily drug habit doesn't mean the obsession was wrong. It meant the drugs were wrong. Doesn't mean I shouldn't be obsessed. You should be obsessed. Anything that's good, you should be all in about, right? It's Valentine's Day. Make it Valentine's Day all day, okay? And make it in a big way. The people who complain about control are the same people who refuse to exert control over their environment and then resent their environment. People who misused control in the past will refuse to take control because they don't trust themselves to use control for the good of others. People that have had power and misused power don't want power again. I want power. I want control. I want money. I want love. I want attention. I want celebrity. I want it all because I'm not going to misuse it. I'm not worried about that anymore. I got that handled. Those without control have refused to lead in life and refused to be responsible for controlling their environments. And the less they take control of, the less they can take control of and the less they can exert control. If you refuse control, someone else will take it. Media, spouse, neighbors, politicians, Twitter, Facebook, Big Pharma. Big Pharma reminds you 2 out of every 3 commercials are reminding you that you got a problem. You're depressed or you're anxious, okay? You're too excited or not excited enough, okay? You're too hard or you're too soft. Constantly, 2 out of 3 ads every day. Your legs feel good, your legs feel bad, okay? Too much energy, too little. You urinate too much or you don't urinate enough. You can't sleep, whatever, man. They just constantly pounding you, controlling you into a place where you're like, something's wrong with me. Almost to where every condition is something wrong. So I am a control freak. I demand control. I demand answers. I want to know. I do not like surprises, okay? So they're going to say I'm OCD, ODD, ADD, I got a problem, I'm going to control, I'm an obsessive. Yeah, dude, I want control, but I don't want your drugs. I want control because I cannot have control on your drugs, right? I want good people around me. I cannot have good control with bad people around me. Every day you and I are given an opportunity to grab the reins of our life, ride the beast, man, ride the beast, spank the beast, fuel the beast. To control your own environment. I wake up and try to beat the sun up every day as a way to have control. I'm like, dude, I beat the sun up. I beat the entire universe up. Now I know I didn't really beat the sun up, but it gives me the illusion that I'm in control of my life. I start with a win. I get to the gym as fast as I can in the morning. First thing I do is I wake up in the morning, I complain. First thing I do every day, damn it. Okay. I go urinate and then I beat the sun up, man. I start coming to my senses. Control your environment, Grant. I'm awakening now. Hey, I beat the sun up today. Then I go to the gym. Man, I got control of my body. See, I know control is important. I know control leads to me exceeding targets. Control leads to me exceeding deadlines. Okay. Because I demand control. I fire someone who is late more than twice because I know I have a better chance of my own success when I'm in control of my office, my culture, my work, when Bobby here can't even show up on time. If I make excuses for Bobby not showing up on time, guess what? One day I won't be showing up on time. And I already did that. I played that game in my first levels of success in my life in my mid 30s and 40s. And I started resting on my laurels when I got out of control of my environment and my schedule. Today I make tough decisions because I exercise control. So no matter how hard it is for me to tell somebody, dude, your breath's bad. You can't show up late. Your car is beat up. Your finances suck. When are you going to take care of your life? You're not doing the right thing by your wife. When I exert that kind of control, even though it's uncomfortable for me, I grow stronger. So while many defer opportunities to be in control by saying, it's not my business. No thanks. Let me think about it. You know, let me think about it is a way not to be in control. Why don't you just say no, right? No, I don't want to do it. Or yes, let's do it right now. Let me do it and make a mistake and get the mistake handled so I'm in control again. See, they prefer to sit in the back seat to add time to the equation to tell you, oh, maybe some mystic psychic is going to tell me what to do. I had a lady wanted to read my lines once. I'm like, baby, there ain't no way those lines are going to control my future. Okay. This is a hand with some lines in it. When that starts controlling my future, so by me giving you my hand means I'm out of control. People sit, they sit at your side and try to navigate you while you drive the car. You want to drive the car? Sit behind the wheel. You can't do it from over there, okay? Adding what ifs, adding doubts, okay? I can't tell you how many people have told me not to start my second company, not start the third company, not start the real estate company. Don't do this. Don't do that. Dude, you ain't done anything, okay? All you do is give advice. Look, most managers don't want to be bosses. Everybody says they want to be the boss. Everybody's like, I want to be the boss. I want to be the boss. You can't even write a check. You can't write a check. You can't be a boss. You can't make a hard decision. You can't be a boss. If you can't control and be willing to be in control and have people call you a control freak, you cannot be the boss. Okay. Especially when things go to hell. Hell, most bosses don't even want to be the boss. Okay. They say, I am the boss, but they don't want to do the boss thing. You know, the boss thing, make the decision. Sign the check, put your money where your mouth is. Bosses and managers with that all-in obsession with success who will do whatever it takes to see the project through, even in spite of their death or pain, are very difficult to find. But they're impossible to find if you're not committed to finding them. The norm is that people are satisfied with having VP on their card. I'm the VP. I know companies have 50 different VPs, hundreds of them. Okay. So many VPs, the title means nothing. And then they turn down the responsibility and refuse to exercise any control trying to hold on to their VP on their business card. Look, when it comes down to it, control is not a bad thing. Being out of control, on the other hand, having no control, that would be a bad thing. Society complains about the control freak when the problem is the millions of managers, executives, business owners, department leaders, politicians, and parents who refuse to be in control. Managers have to check with their people to see if they have buy-in. It's unbelievable to me. How many companies I call on? Let me check my six people. The entrepreneur, he owns the business. He put his money at stake 15 years ago. He now has three people that have been with him 5 years. Hey, let's go do this. Let me check with these five people. Dude, they weren't here when you bought your business 15 years ago. Sad. Trust me, if you come across people who struggle with the idea of the control freak that I'm sharing with you right now, you do not want to hire these people. Okay. Ask someone, how do you feel about being controlled? Oh, I hate it. Good. This won't work. Okay. Pick up this book. Okay. Get them to do something. Okay. Go to the restroom. Give me the key. Okay. Go open my car, wash my car, do this. You're going to start at this task today. Take somebody out of their department and say, you're going to go to shipping today. Why? I'm worried about why, dude. Just do it. I need people to follow. You need people to follow. There's nothing wrong with it. Those who resist control are those who have something to hide. Okay? I should be able to be controlled. You can control me. Tell me what to do. Tell me where to go. Just be sure you got control. Okay? Those who resist or speak badly about control or even micromanaging are low performers and are surrounded by people operating below their potential. I want to say that to you again. Those who resist or speak badly about control or even the idea of micromanaging, he's a micromanager. When people talk poorly about that, they are low performers, they're performing below their potential, and are surrounded by people operating below their potential. I'm in Las Vegas. I'm at a restaurant. Waiter comes to us, table of 12 people. Let me tell you about the specials tonight. I'm like, dude, I don't really care about the specials. Okay? Just tell me what to eat. Please, my brother, take control. Tell me what to eat. He says, well, I don't know what you're hungry for. Dude, I don't either. What do I eat? You're here every day. Please take control. Do not read the menu. Do not tell me about the specials. Tell me. Look at me. Tell me what to eat. You're here every night, man. What do I look like? Okay? You understand? I wanted him to be in control, but he wouldn't be. So I just took control back. Good. I'll take the New York steak, burn it on both sides, medium rare in the middle, nothing else with it. Thank you. Wine, please. Understand? Look, if you're not going to be in control, then I'm going to be in control. Okay? Because somebody's got to be. So many people don't think enough in themselves today to believe that they can control their environment. They've given up on it. They think it's the politician, their kids, finances, excuses, the economy, time, school, teachers, neighborhood. It's not, man. It's you. It's an epidemic in this country. We got two epidemics, average people and nobody wants to be in control. It's an epidemic maybe born out of psychoanalyzing that has been so popular over the last 20 or 30 years where everybody was searching for their inner child and a return to Dr. Seuss. Look, here's the deal, okay? It's not ever going to be me because I'm obsessed with control. I want control, okay? Terrorism going on around the world, people driving cars crazy. I'm looking for every way possible to control. Zika outbreaks, I want control. I'm obsessed with avoiding the problems that come with losing control in my life. And particularly the most important parts of my life, which are my dreams, my business, my kids, my marriage, my friends, my church. Look, if that means you call me a control freak, baby, call me a control freak, okay? Go ahead, put the label on me. Let's roll. In fact, you won't need to. I got it on myself right here. It says 10X, okay? It says obsess. It says B-O-B-A, be obsessed or be average. From ensuring my family's personal safety, which means money, okay, which means controlling my environment, which means safety in every way possible, okay, money, friends, okay. You want to really be protected on this planet? Have a lot of friends. You won't need a lot of money. You won't need gold. You'll need friends everywhere that know how to grow food. I want control. Don't wait for someone to give you control. Look, you don't have to be given responsibility or promoted to a leadership position to exert control over your environment. I have never, ever been given control. Nobody ever gives me control. I just take it. I exerted control because I trusted myself to get the job done. See, control is about trust. Do you trust yourself? Yes or no? I don't want control because you don't trust yourself. You don't know what you're doing. It wasn't a matter of anyone giving me permission. I remember I was fired from a job when I was 26, 27 years old. I'm like, okay, good, man. You fired me. Excellent, man. You feel good about that? Good. I went out and sold something. I didn't leave just because he tried to take control from me. Just because I wrecked a car. There's no reason to fire a young man, 27 years old, that can produce at high levels. I just went and produced more. If you see an obvious problem and you have a solution, it is your responsibility to exert control, to step up and lead. You walk into the restroom and there's paper on the floor. Everybody walks over the paper. Nobody wants control. Okay, just throw a piece of paper down on your office floor and watch how long it stays there. Watch how everybody refuses to be in control of their environment. It's just a piece of paper. No, it's not, man. It's the opportunity to be in control. See, I make the declaration. I got this. I look for every opportunity. I got this. I grab the parking space. Okay? You understand? As the old saying goes, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. Man, why'd you do that? Because somebody needed to. Phone rings. Pick it up. Took control. In the cutthroat world we live in today, you can't wait for the authorities to provide for your future. If your boss isn't around and a high-level client needs servicing, what are you going to tell him? Wait till he gets back? Okay? Are you going to provide him with the service? Take control. Provide him with the service. Take the lead. Fill in the gap. Phone rings. Pick it up. That's an opportunity, man. You're filling in gaps, right? You're taking control. People want that. So what if you make the wrong decision? Big deal. Don't make the wrong decision. Make the wrong decision. Be in control. And if you make the wrong decision, fix it. Be in control again. Be dangerous. And if your boss doesn't like it, if your boss hates it, if your boss gets rid of you because of it, hey, come work for me. We're always recruiting. Look, I believe I know best in everything. I do. I'm going to tell you right now, I believe I know the best until somebody else takes control and says, no, I have something else. Okay. There's a guy that I study, dude. I trust. I literally give him control of the knowledge I can take in from it because I know he studied more in this space. I believe I know best in everything I do. And if I don't, I get trained until I have complete confidence and competence in that space. Whether it's making a sales call, handling my four-year-old, operating a firearm, got one on me right now. I want control over all the various skills required of me to protect and grow my life. I don't need to be the smartest person in the room. I don't know. All these people talk about the smartest person in the room. I'm the smartest person in the room. I got smart people. Good for you. Dude, I want control. I don't need to be right. I need to be willing to exert control over a situation. When I'm buying a real estate deal that's $50 or $60 million, I do not need to be right. I do not need to be the smartest. I do not need to have the perfect equation. I need control of the situation. Okay, look at the players, the Googles, the Facebooks. They're in control. They got control. Look at our government, completely out of control. So what do they control? Nothing except the media. Look, I have a real problem with people who equate intelligence with leadership and control. Intelligence is not leadership, and intelligence is not control. And being nice to people, by the way, is not leadership. Being nice to people is not even intelligent. Being nice, if you look up the word nice back in the 1700s or 1400s, the word nice actually meant the village clown or village fool. So all of you out there trying to be nice, you're trying to be nice. It doesn't reduce your turnover being nice to people. Being nice is not nice. What you want to do is be in control so your people produce at higher levels and become obsessed with this concept. It's not about just being smart or even being right. If someone is right, doesn't mean they have control. You could be right on the highway and still be in a wreck. You'd much better be off being in control. Being wrong and being in control would keep you out of that wreck. They'll ultimately be unable to prove themselves right, and therefore, because they're out of control, they're wrong. Look, I own five companies, okay? I don't even look at them as five companies. If you look at them on paper, they're five different companies. I don't manage those businesses. I control them. I hire people. I hire managers. I hire department heads. I meet with them. I write checks. I take risks. I make decisions. I put myself in my business, my company, my family, my money, the money you give me. I put it, I take control of it for a little while. That's what I do. I take control. I'm a boss. I'm an entrepreneur. I need managers. So while I need them to make sure we get things done, I have to control the environment until somebody else steps in and says, hey, Grant, you don't need to take control of the environment anymore, brother. I got it, my man. And then I get to do what? I get to go control something else. Look, there's plenty on this planet to take control of. Just look around. It's not like, oh, I'm a control freak. Really? Well, why is everything out of control? Why are so many people doing so poorly? I'm willing to give up control when somebody around me steps up and says, dude, I got this. I got this. But that means they need to take control. They don't need to lead. They need to take control. Control the process, control the results. The control freak is like an IRS auditor, a stickler, obsessed with seeing the results. Show me what you did in 2015, Mr. Cardone. Show me. Show it to me. He doesn't say, tell me. Show it to me. I need to see it. I need to see this and that. Show me this statement and that statement. See, you can demand results and you can demand to see those results at any moment of any day. That's control. You're an auditor. Show me. Show me the numbers. You know, people lie. People get confused. People distort reality. Show me. Show me our successes. Show me the money. Show me the ink. Show me the contract. Show me where you put that money. Show me what the customer said. Don't tell me what they said. You're telling me what you heard. Show me. I'm a control freak. Show me the statements. Show me how you close the customer. Make that part of your culture. Listen to the phone calls. What are they really saying? Not what did your manager think they said. See, like in our sales department, we record all the calls in the sales department so I can review them later or even in the moment. Even better, sometimes I just drop in on that call without anyone knowing I'm even on the call. Sometimes I'll interject myself into the call, take over in real time, control, that's right, to save the close, to save the deal, to save the customer, to show the intention of my organization and to my customers that I'm involved. I want to see things for myself, what is happening. I don't live in an ivory tower. And if you do, you need to leave it. Get back on the floor. Get back into the business. Get back into that department. Become obsessed. You cannot be obsessed from a distance. I know people that run 60 and 70 different operations. Every Monday, they're on a call saying, go over everything with me. I know other people that try to run 60 and 70 operations and never check on anything. You're out of control. You can be a control freak. I want to always feel the pulse of the company. I want to feel the pulse of the people. I want to feel the pulse of the customer. I want to feel the pulse of my social media. What are they actually saying to me? I actually look at my own feeds. I respond to these people. I want to touch them. Can't I trust my people, you say? Grant, what are your people for? When are you going to turn over control to your people so you got to trust other people? Aren't they capable of holding themselves accountable? Didn't you hire the right people in the first place? Aren't the right systems in place? I refuse to assume control of any of that. No technology is going to take over my control of the situation. I refuse to assume anything because anyone who does will sooner or later be sorry for it. What's the old saying? To assume, make a ass out of you and out of me? Hey, no thanks. Been there, done that. Look, I can find better ways, faster ways, smarter ways to do things, to do business, only when I confront and control myself first, my environment second, my people third, my business fourth, and ultimately control my obsessions. Chapter 12, obsess with persistence. It has become acceptable for people to quit and not see their goals through. This has been happening in the face with validation and proof and evidence over history of all the great stories that each of us know where persistence is one of the great characteristics of success. Here are some examples of people who persisted longer than anyone thought even reasonable. Walt Disney was turned down for financing 302 times. His first animation company went bankrupt. Stephen King's first book, Carrie, was rejected 30 times. He even threw the manuscript in the trash and then pulled it back out again. Oprah Winfrey was told she was unfit for television. Fred Astaire was told during his first screen test, he can't act and he can't sing and he's slightly bald. We know how that ended up. Lady Gaga's first record deal was dropped after just 1 month. Howard Schultz, employer, had no interest in his coffee idea, his dumb little coffee idea called Starbucks. Steven Spielberg was rejected from film school 3 times. Bill Gates dropped out of Harvard and his first company, Trafo Data, went nowhere. Henry Ford's first 2 car companies failed and left him broke. Mark Cuban failed as a carpenter, a waiter, and a cook. When people quit, others comfort them with condolences. Well, you tried. You did your best. It's all right. It didn't work out. We love you anyway. Why don't you find something easy? We love you just the way you are. Just be happy with what you have. The people will give you permission to quit. They will even show you sympathy while they do it. But you don't need to be comforted at that moment when things don't turn out right. You don't need sympathy and you don't need comfort. Sympathy is not what you need. Comfort doesn't pay the bills. I've emphasized in other chapters, you are at the best when you're outside your comfort zone, pushing yourself and your limits to make the impossible possible. And that can't happen if you quit. Only quitting is failure. When I started my first business, I wish they would have taught me this in college. Okay. 5 years I spent in college. If they would have taught me this one thing about persistence and quitting. When I started my first business, I was out pitching a new idea that I was super, super excited about, a priority sales training program that was called information-assisted selling. I knew that everyone was going to listen to me and want to buy my product. I really believed this is the greatest idea ever in the history of the world. I'm going to turn sales upside down, change the world. I'm going to make salespeople respected again, the sales process shorter. I'm going to improve profits. People are going to be more effective. There's going to be less turnover and on and on. I put together a business plan and figured, a simple business plan. For me, a business plan means like 6 lines, okay? I put together this business plan, figured out if just 10% of the people that I pitched to bought my product, I was going to have a very great profitable business. I knew the idea was solid. The technology was effective. The market needed something new. Hey, sales, let's face it, hadn't changed for 500 years, and I had this good track record of making things work. My potential market was monster. 28 million small businesses just in America, the great USA. And 28 million small businesses, 100% of them, depend on this thing called sales that nobody wants to do. After all, I thought, who doesn't want to increase their sales? Within 24 hours of setting up shop, I was ready to quit. Literally, within 24 hours of launching my business, 24 hours later, I was like, man, this is going to be hard. For the next 2 years, I wanted to quit every day, every single day, sometimes in between calls. I was making cold calls to get established, and so many people would hang up on me, curse me out, tell me to never call again. I'm not interested, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Once in a while, someone would say, sure, come show it to me. Yeah, we're interested. Yeah, we're looking at something. And then I would get on a plane. I'd fly to their city, present my product. I'd also use the rest of my time in that city to follow up on some of the cold calls where they hung up on me or cursed at me. See, I just didn't quit. Okay. As much as I wanted to quit, even when they weren't interested, I didn't quit. I was trying to sell, at that time, successful businesses and establish millionaires successfully already doing business, accomplished people. I was trying to sell them on how to make more money and teach their sales team and their management how to make more sales. 30 years old, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know my idea is good. Now, I knew it wouldn't be easy. I knew it wouldn't be easy. Nothing great is easy, right? I thought it would be easier than it was, though, and it wasn't. I wasn't pulling in enough money to even pay the bills in the beginning. I was going through cash so fast. I was terrified. I couldn't sleep well at night. And I was experiencing monster amounts of call reluctance because I was getting beat up so many times. You know, it's like Tyson used to say, hey, everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the face. And I was getting hit in the face every 30 minutes. 3 weeks past most people's breaking point, I was still making hundreds of calls a day and visiting businesses in person who had told me, don't even bother. No one was biting. No one was giving me money. No one was buying. No one was interested. No one around me had ever done what I was attempting. I didn't have any place to go. There was no mentor to say, what do I do right now? I had no role models to look up to. No one to show me the way. The people who loved me were encouraging me to quit. My mom, my sister, my brother, okay? Friends, dude, just hang it up. You don't need this. Maybe it's a bad idea. I hated losing. 90% of the time I was losing and I hated it. At my wits end, what does that mean anyway? Oh, it means wit, whatever it takes. At my wits end, I seriously considered giving it up, really quitting, returning to a job doing sales for someone else. What I held on to at that moment, in that moment when you're going to quit, what you can hold on to is the stories of all the successful people who refused to quit. The list is endless. Disney, Oprah, Ford, everyone. The obsessed, everyone that we know the name of refused to quit or we would not know their name. Mother Teresa, Jesus, Gandhi. The super successful don't just overcome their failures. They use failure as fuel to persist. I took inspiration from these people, from their ability to stick with their obsession in the face of failure. People often ask me, hey man, show me the other part of your life. Just don't show me on your plane and you're at a book signing and you're speaking on, show me the other parts. Like what part, man? Like the part when I was 29 and I'm going through more money than I can make when I'm making 50 or 60 physical presentations a day, where I'm starting at 6 o'clock in the morning and finishing at midnight, where I'm going home after 3 weeks and the only thing I have to show for it is a hotel bill, a cab, and an airplane ticket, where I'm losing more money than I'm making for years. J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter series, Rowling, talked about the importance of failure for success when she spoke to the graduating class at Harvard in June of 2008. She said, you might never fail on the scale I did. Imagine this, man. Okay. You may never fail on the scale that I did, Rowling told that privileged audience, but it's impossible to live without failing at something. Unless you live so cautiously that you might as well not have lived at all, in which case you fail by default. See, the truth is you cannot fail if you don't quit. Like if you could make this a stable factor of your life, it is impossible. I believe this today. It is impossible for me to fail if I refuse to quit. If I want a $4 billion real estate portfolio, if I refuse to quit, unless I die, and maybe even then, okay, I could get there. Look, this is why it's so important to be clear on your obsession and why I focused on that in this book. Why this obsession thing is why this book is so vital. Your obsession will keep you going when you need bank loans from lenders who said no. When you want to buy at prices that the seller refused to counter at, you could stay in there. When you wish to marry a girl that has no interest in you, your obsession will allow you to persist. Prospects will say no. Investors will laugh you out of the room. Banks won't even see you. Employees will quit. Disappointment will happen. You'll have deals stolen from you, customers stolen from you. Hey, you might have the loved one of your life taken from you. Your family and friends will tell you that you're crazy for stick and stay. You may have to go into debt over and over again. You may have to sell part of your company to an investor you don't like. You will have to put up with stuff that makes you feel like you're selling out. You will do things that you hate. You will be underpaid, overworked, exhausted, and you will think that giving up is your oasis. Well, it's not. The obsessed keep going. Okay? They're not going for a paycheck. Trust me, nobody would go through this much pain and agony. The rejection, the disappointment. Nobody would do this for just a paycheck. Unless, of course, a paycheck's got a bigger attachment to you than just money in a bank. See, the difference between success and failure is staying in the game when others throw in the towel. They will quit, trust me. Everyone quits. Everyone. Even you. But some people quit and park themselves, and some people quit and start again. Notice how many professional ball teams win in the last minutes of the game, the last 30 or 60 seconds. It's common that that happens. They never quit. And even if they lose, they suit up, show up, and play like champions. They won't even walk off the field when the game is clearly over. Look, you need the drive to see something through all the way, no matter what. Don't worry if you don't have it now. Don't worry if you don't have that ambition and that drive. Don't worry if you lost it. It can be developed and it can be found again. Here's some ways that you might try to exercise your persistence and that muscle so you stay in the deal. Complete every task. Look, finish everything you start, no matter what it is. You know, I picked this up and I started to go through something. Finish every task and quit walking away from unfinished projects in your professional and your personal life. When you hit the wall, don't focus on the obstacle. Do not focus on the wall. I know this is a little Matrix-like, but look for creative ways to take another run at that same thing. Expect others to quit. They will. I promise you, they will quit. Your competition will quit. While persistence begins and ends with you, be prepared for the people around you, both that work for you and that compete against you, will quit. Also, beware that people around you that love and care for you will try to persuade you to do the same, because that is plan A for most people. Plan A, plan B, and plan C for most of the people that surround you is to quit. I'm going to try a little bit. If it doesn't work out, well then, oh well. Woe is me. Next, use yesterday's successes as fuels for persisting today. Always grab anything, any win you can out of yesterday and use it to fuel your next move. But don't get stuck in that win. Instead, stay interested in the next success and use the last one to fuel the journey going forward. Stay busy generating interest or income or learning something. The way to stay persistent and the way to fuel this muscle to build the top and bottom and the side of this, the way to do that is to continue to learn, to read, to study, to read about other people's successes, to get a mentor, to get a coach, to stay inspired. Do things that help you keep going, because a rolling stone, as they say, gathers no moss. Never settle. Never be satisfied with your triumphs, and instead use them as fuel to move you forward to your full potential, okay? So don't rest on the laurels of yesterday. Those are wins from yesterday, successes from yesterday, from last week, last month, last quarter. Anybody talking about what they did last year or in 2009, 2005, back in you are psychologically impaired human being stuck in the past. The true success seekers are out there in their 80s, their 90s, saying, hey, what are we going to do? Let's create something. When it comes to success, as my mom used to say, stick and stay, Grant, it's bound to pay. Hang in there no matter what. While there are probably a number of things in your life that would be convenient to quit on, your success is definitely not one of them. Maybe it's a kid. Maybe it's a cousin. Maybe it's an uncle. Maybe it's an aunt. Maybe it's your mom or dad that you need to repair a relationship with. Communicate. Don't quit, okay? Maybe it's a spouse or an ex-spouse. Maybe it's a client. Maybe it's a book deal and they said they passed on you. Maybe it's a TV deal. Hey, just go back and renew those relationships and don't quit. Persist until the miracle happens. Look, most people quit right before the miracle takes place. Can you imagine? Just moments before it happened. One day I was sitting at lunch by myself at a popular healthy restaurant, basically a place that served wheatgrass and bean sprouts and a lot of bad information. It's a hip part of Houston. I'm 30 years old. I just returned from another city that had offered me nothing but failure after failure after failure. It was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I was taking a break from the phone. I remembered it was just like yesterday, actually. I was tired. I was whipped. I was terrified and I was out of juice except for that green grass I was about to drink. I was on the verge of quitting my new job, my new business for real. And that morning, I even told the girl that I was dating at the time, I don't even know if I can do this anymore, man. It's just banging me up so hard. I mean, I'm beat up so bad. You know, I'm trying to talk myself out of the deal. I sat at lunch in total defeat. I thought to myself, and at those moments, you could be with 3 or 4 people. You're talking to yourself. You're all alone. You know, success is really, unfortunately, you're going to be all by yourself in those big key decisions. Here I sat there by myself. Hey, what am I going to do? I thought to myself, I need a sign. That's how bad it was. I'm down to praying and crossing fingers now. Something up there. Please tell me, do I quit or do I go on? And if I go on, where do I go next? I need a clear sign. I talked to no one, to myself. I don't even know who I was addressing. Was I praying? Was I begging? Was I wishing? Was I hoping? Or just talking to myself? I don't know. I still don't know. I do know that I was in total doubt at a very low point in my life and that far from quitting. I was so lost that I was starting to look at horoscopes. I actually considered the lady reading the lines. I'm like, somebody, please tell me. Look, when you start depending on horoscopes, you know you're in trouble. After making my plea for a sign, I got in my car to go home. I started driving, literally, and saw the license plate on the car in front of me said Salt Lake City. Well, I'd never been to Salt Lake City, and I took this as a clear sign from the gods above that I should go to Salt Lake City and promote my next seminar. Now, I know this sounds crazy, but at that moment, I felt it was a sign. I'm like, that's where I have to go. Okay, in that desperate state I was in, I just needed a tiny little push. You know why? Because I hadn't quit yet. I had thought about quitting. I was tempted by the devil, but I had not quit. And I used that sign because, by the way, for all of you out there, it says maybe it was God. It was not God. God has his hands full with many other problems more than whether I quit my job or not. I know it all sounds woo-woo. I don't think it's actually woo-woo. I think it's this. I was looking for a reason not to quit more than I was looking for reasons to quit. Why else would I sit there and say, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? See, the point is you're not being tempted to quit. You don't want to quit. Nobody wants to quit, okay? This chapter should give you permission and understanding that the only way you can fail is to quit. Where to go to next? Something to keep moving toward. Because forward movement means you're not quitting. But you got to stay obsessed to get there. I drove back to my little 100 square foot leased office. I got on the phone and I started calling businesses in Salt Lake. Hey, I'm going to be there Monday. Okay, for the next 3 days, I'm going to be there Monday. The calls were hard as they always were. Okay, but I had some place to go. As they always were, people hung up on me. Don't call me back. I never heard of you. And then finally I heard somebody said, sure, when you're in town, come by and see me. If I have time, I'll talk to you. I took that as another sign. I'm going to Salt Lake City. The same day I bought my plane ticket, the following Sunday, I flew into Salt Lake City. Over the next few weeks, my miracle happened. I made more money in 2 weeks than I had made in the past 2 years. Something clicked. I figured things out. All of a sudden, something like a Rubik's Cube, lacking the intelligence and the genius, persistence allowed me to put the cube together in a way that forever changed my life. Literally, that one trip changed my entire future. I wouldn't be writing books today, wouldn't be speaking to audiences, wouldn't talk at the Pentagon, wouldn't be rated a top 10 business influencers in the world with names like the leader of Apple and Google. That trip made it possible for me not just to pay my bills, but fund the rest of my career, to live my purpose to help people, to actually become a star in the sales arena. I had refused to quit. Simply, that's all I did. And that was a good call because my miracle was just around the corner, and I expect yours is too. Look, if you refuse to quit, I promise you, whatever it is you're trying to create, whatever it is you're trying to scale out, the investors you're trying to get, the dream you're trying to make a reality, if you don't quit, you will not fail. It is just a matter of time before you figure out how to do that thing. While I had not been successful up until that point, I was learning what did not work. You see, I thought I had been failing, but if you don't quit, you don't fail because you end up with all this data that tells you how to adjust as long as you're not banging yourself up and killing yourself and beating yourself up the whole time. I wish somebody would have told me in college, dude, if you don't quit and you just keep collecting data and refuse to quit and keep showing up, sooner or later, the universe will break. You know, they talk about the rock and the stream. The stream wins. It's not the rock. And from then on, boom, after Salt Lake City, my career rocked. Was it the license plate? Was the license plate some miraculous sign? Was it some alien force in the universe sending me information? Was it God? Your God? My God? Our God? Was it Allah? Who knows, man? I don't know. Maybe it was the signs. Maybe the moons were aligned. I don't think it was any of that. I think it's simple. Don't quit. Don't quit, you win. Period. Of course, it was none of those things. Don't quit and you win, okay? And the truth is, as I look back on that today, I wasn't trying to quit. I was trying to figure out how to keep going. So when you're talking to yourself about quitting, understand. The only reason you're having that conversation is there's another voice saying, don't do it, man. I gave it one more try, and I gave it my best try at that. Okay, this is your miracle moment. Every moment you want to quit is your miracle moment. Treat every moment you want to bail as your miracle moment. This moment when you think you have gone beyond every limit you have, and then you know you must go one more time. Okay, when you do that, everything will turn around. Maybe not this time, maybe not the next time, but remember, you're collecting data. Those who are truly obsessed and are willing to persist when nothing anymore makes sense, when everybody in your camp, everybody on your bench is saying, dude, let's bail. Let's quit. Be the one that doesn't. Become obsessed with developing that muscle of persistence as one of your power weapons and one of your great assets. That's leadership too. Because your movement forward toward the hardest, most soul-crushing times, the times that are filled with impossibilities, that is what will guarantee you success. When all the average people would never continue, put one foot in front of the other and refuse to back down. Everybody's told you no. Everybody said it's impossible. Yes, you are crazy. Do it again. Knowing that when you quit, remember, when you quit, you only have to start over again. Get it done, then get it right. Perfectionism is nothing but a fancy word for those who refuse to start. I'm a perfectionist, Grant. No, you're not. You don't get started, okay? And you don't persist. You just got this fancy, I'm a perfectionist. No, you're a procrastinator. Call it what it is. You don't want to put yourself at risk. When you insist on everything being perfect, you end up waiting too long, you delay your success, and you never get to try things out, which actually is what's necessary to achieve any high quality of success anyway. I say this all the time. Frequency, the number of times you do something, is what creates excellent products and excellent service. Perfectionists lie to themselves and disguise their lack of persistence, that muscle, by claiming that they are somehow desiring perfection. everything will sell itself somehow. If we make the product just so perfect and cute, and if I get the perfect little business card with my perfect name and I spend 3 days getting it so perfect, then everyone will want to buy from me. How delusional. And you call me delusional because I'm obsessed and I'm a control freak? No, no. You, my friend, are in a delusion that you call perfection. It's not even about perfection. It's not about perfection. It's about not doing anything. You're literally trying to pull away from the marketplace. How delusional and egotistical can someone be that they like, we've created the most perfect tool? What would be perfect? This universe changes every second. Whatever you create right this second can be improved on tomorrow. While you wait to get it perfect, I take your market share from you. I will literally, I don't have to steal it.